The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright, the power to create a happier, healthier life, drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. Are you ready to have some fun tonight? Well, we're going to be talking to the Monk Dude, who happens to be an award-winning songwriter, an author, a world traveler, a youth mentor, and a meditation instructor, a yogi. And if that's not enough fun, well, then you're going to hear me right now try to pronounce his name. It's Dada Naba Neil Andunde. I'm sorry for making that such a mess, but he's going to explain all of that to us in a bit. But before that, I want to dive into something that I've noticed quite a bit from my daily happenings, especially during the last few weeks. It appears that people are standoffish, protective, so worried about being judged and criticized. And everyone wants to control the situation to see their outcome. And because my clients and my friends reflect back to me what my issues are, I'm experiencing the exact same thing as everyone else. So why is this? Well, could it be that those who feel that they're being judged or criticized are, in fact, the ones that are judging others and being critical of others first and foremost? Stop and think for a minute. This week, someone tried to exert their power over me, and I got to tell you, I didn't like it one bit. I rebelled. But then I had to get honest with myself, and I had to realize, well, hey, wait a minute. I am doing the same thing to others. I am trying to exert my power over them. I am the one being judgmental first. And I am being critical of some of my friends. And then I have to stop and realize my friends and associates are but a mere reflection of myself. It all starts and stops with me. So what is the solution? Well, awareness for one thing, realizing that it is simply based on the mind's perception. And it all goes back to reflecting victimhood. And once you realize that, you can shift the focus to somewhere else other than the person who is being represented in the mirror. I can flip that switch from thinking as a victim to just letting that other person be who they are, because I'm realizing that they are but a mirror of what is going on within me. No matter how mad and how angry I get, it's not about the other person. It's about me. And even when I realize this, sometimes the animosity doesn't stop there. Not always. So I need to take a break from that situation, maybe a day or two, until my thoughts shift. What I don't want to do is walk away permanently from this situation, because the same situation will occur again and again with others that I attract to me. Until I deal with it head on, I am just going to get the same issue thrown back in my face. I'm going to see it again and again and again in mirrors. So I want to flip that switch to completely distract me from the issue until the power struggle resolves in my mind. I'm going to focus on myself, and I'm going to do what makes me happy. Perhaps you may not like your job. So shift your focus away from thinking about the job and pinpoint it to the place in the future where you want to be. Create in your mind what will make you happy. Remember, all of this contrast is simply letting you know what you don't want. And this is the fantastic time to start creating what you do want. Take advantage of the contrast. Take advantage of the mirror that is reflecting back to you so that you can expand. This is the greatest gift the universe is providing you. Appreciate that great insight into yourself, and then you can move forward attracting other mirror reflections back to you. It's true. You are living in a hologram. And once you realize this, life becomes much easier for you to create, for you to serve, and for you to keep expanding. And that's what we want right now, is for everyone to expand to that better place. So now, sit back, relax, as we take a commercial break and return talking to this extremely talented monk dude. We'll be right back.
The secret to all wealth, prosperity, joy, and abundance boils down to self-love and sustained focus. That's what it's all about. But how does one go about creating this mindset? It's actually simpler than you think. World-renowned Law of Attraction Master Harrison Klein will show you the same easy steps that celebrities, professionals, and millionaires use. You will be amazed as you begin to live your grandest dreams. Not certain of this? Remove all doubt for only a dollar. Yes, that's right. Only $1. It's a no-brainer. Go to HarrisonKleinInternational.com/dream and start rocking your world today. That's HarrisonKleinInternational.com/dream.
Hi, I'm Sue Elliott, Editor-in-Chief of Law of Attraction Magazine. I would love to introduce you to the magazine so you can manifest the life of your dreams. You'll find powerful wisdom, insights, and easy techniques inside every issue of Law of Attraction Magazine. And it's available right now, digitally and on most newsstands. Visit lawofattractionmag.com to purchase your online copy today. That's Law of Attraction, MAG.com.
Law of Attraction Magazine is not associated with Law of Attraction Radio Network. It's here. Our wealth creation cruise was a huge success. Now you can have these powerful workshops for your very own. You will learn life-changing strategies about creating wealth from the top LOA wealth experts. Plus, you'll also receive the Jewels Money Activation Hypnosis CD. Get your copies now at lawofattractioncruise.com.
Okay, we are back. Yes, our Wealth Creation Cruise recordings are now on sale. All of these workshops were so fantastic, and the amount of information you receive is phenomenal. I've heard from many that attended the cruise that they are experiencing tremendous success since they got home. So go to lawofattractioncruise.com and look for the Wealth Creation Cruise MP3s. And as long as you're there, check out our upcoming cruise with the phenomenal Eric Altman. Oh my goodness, it's going to be so fantastic working on our energy for 3 solid days. This is going to be a very exciting cruise. So check out the Wealth Creation Cruise recordings, MP3s, on sale now at lawofattractioncruise.com and check out our next cruise with Eric Altman. Now let's get on with the monk dude. Real name, Dada Nabaneel Anande, is an award-winning songwriter, an author, world traveler, youth mentor, and a meditation instructor. In 1979, Dada was ordained as a yoga monk of the Ananda Marga Yoga Society. He has since won 8 international songwriting awards, produced 9 musical albums, published a popular book on meditation, and performed and spoke in over 40 countries, including Brazil, where he appeared on stage with the Dalai Lama and played for a crowd of more than 10,000 people. Wow. Dada helps people to connect to their inner source of love using music, meditation, and mantra. He lives in Los Altos Hills, California, where he teaches a course on yogic meditation, a technology for conscious evolution at UC Berkeley. He is currently working on a comic science fiction novel. This I gotta hear. Welcome, Dada, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Jules. It's a pleasure to be here. And perhaps you'd like me to just run through my long Sanskrit name for you, because it's a little daunting.
I would love it.
So I'm a yoga monk, and I was given this name in India by my spiritual master. And so my name is Dada, which means brother. Uh-huh. And Naba Nilananda is my personal name. So that's in Sanskrit, and I don't really expect you to be able to get your head around that. That's why I call myself the monk dude.
And that's a wise decision. But let me just try it. Naba Ananda.
Not quite. Naba Neil Ananda.
Naba Neil Ananda.
Perfect.
Oh, good. Oh, wonderful. I was so worried I was going to annihilate that last name. So, and what does that name mean?
So the nice thing about Sanskrit is that it's a kind of modular language. So you can take all the bits of it and break it down and find out the original meaning of any word. So Naba Neil Ananda breaks down as Naba means the sky, Nila means blue, and Ananda means bliss. So the whole phrase it means one who derives bliss from the vastness of the infinite blue sky.
Oh my goodness, that is absolutely beautiful.
So it's this lovely metaphor for the cosmic consciousness.
I love it. Well, Dada, if I may call you that, tell us how you became a yogi. And what would make a young man from New Zealand take such a course in life?
That's a pretty natural question. I grew up in New Zealand, which a lot of people think of as a very, you know, very beautiful country, very kind of natural environment. It's got a low population, so, you know, we get to go outside a lot, and I did that and enjoyed growing up there enormously. But I didn't have a clear sense of purpose, sort of deeper purpose in my life. I mean, I remember when I was little, I wanted to be a wizard, actually.
Really?
That was my big ambition, my first ambition. And I kind of grew out of that. And then I was playing music. I'd been playing music since I was 4. Uh-huh. And I was really into that. I finally decided I wanted to be a rock star. So that was my more realistic ambition after wanting to be a wizard. But when I was 19, I was at university, in my first year at university, and I had a very profound, transformative experience, a spiritual experience, which is very hard to describe, but in that special moment, I kind of realized that the essence of reality is love. And that the whole of universe is arising out of this infinite field of love. And it was completely unexpected. I had no interest in religion or spirituality before that. I was an atheist. Mm. And so this caught me by surprise more than anybody. And I also felt that somehow I had, from this experience, I felt that I had some connection with India, with a yogi in India. That somehow maybe I'd been this had been a communication from some yogi in India.
Really?
So it was a really strange and mystical thing that came out of left field for me totally. And that set me to reading and exploring books on mysticism and yoga. I read a wonderful book called The Varieties of Religious Experience, which is quite a classic. And then started reading a lot of books on Buddhism and Taoism and Sufism and Christian mysticism and really beginning to try to meditate. And I started practicing. And a few months later, when I was still 19, I met a monk like myself from the same order of monks. It's called Ananda Marga. It means the path of bliss. And he was living, the meditation center where he lived was right next door to my friend's place, and I never even knew until I met somebody from there, and they invited me there, and I went, and it just clicked. I just felt like I'd found my life's path.
Wow. And yes, like you were supposed to do that. It was perfect timing for you to grasp everything. But you are much more than just a regular yogi. You have won 8 international songwriting awards and produced 9 musical albums. Yes, you were interested in music, but did the two happen after you became a yogi?
Well, you know, as I said, I had this sort of adolescent fantasy of being a rock star.
Yeah.
And I had been, I did have a pretty deep inclination towards music. I started teaching myself the piano when I was 4, and my grandmother, you know how grandparents are, they're always looking for talent in the family. So she got all excited and conspired with my mother to convince me to take lessons, because I didn't want to learn from anybody. I wanted to teach myself when I was 4. Can you imagine?
Wow.
I was
independent little guy.
A little bit, yeah. So, but, you know, I love my grandmother so much that I would have done anything that she asked. And so my mother knew that if she tried to get me to take lessons, I wouldn't listen to her.
Oh.
But so she got to me through my grandmother. So,
so, wise parents there, I got to tell you. Because I'm a grandma, I can fully appreciate what you just said.
It took me 40 years to figure out what had happened.
And that's as it should be.
Oh, yes. they knew how to get around me. So then I really loved it. I just used to play piano every day.
Oh, wow.
And I was one of those unusual kids. You know, a lot of parents, they get lessons for their children in music, and they kind of have to push them to practice.
Uh-huh.
And that was never necessary. I just loved to play.
Wow. So would you call yourself a child prodigy?
No.
No?
I was talented.
Uh-huh.
No, not a child prodigy. I don't think so, whatever that means. But the thing is, there's lots of people with talent. But to develop talent, you have to practice.
Uh-huh.
And that was the thing that really helped. I mean, I wasn't the most diligent music student, but I was good. I practiced every day for 13 years. So that gave me a really good foundation in classical music, actually. And I'd started writing music spontaneously when I was about 11. So I was really interested in writing, and I was also into poetry and all of that. I love writing songs, and I have some talent for that. And I've just done a lot of it. Mm. You know, I've published quite a lot of albums, as you said, and if you do enough of something and you've got at least some inclination for it, you get good at it.
Now, you did this while a yogi or before?
Yeah, I jumped into the yoga path when I was 19.
Oh, wow.
And I was still a student, but I didn't finish university. I'm a dropout, I'm sorry to say. I do teach a lot of university students now, and I have to tell them that I dropped out. But I always encourage them to finish.
It's whatever is perfect for the individual.
Well, it's some comfort that I'm in the company of Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, a few other fairly successful people. So, you know, you don't have to have a university degree, but it is a useful thing. So I didn't finish university. I went the next year, instead of going back to university, I went to Australia and did an intensive yoga training program, yoga and meditation, and then continued working as a volunteer for our yoga association, which is also a social service organization. So we have a lot of schools and orphanages and medical projects all over the world. So we do have a lot of volunteer kind of work. Mm-hmm. And then 3 years later, I went and became a monk. So that's been my whole adult life, really. I've been a yogi and a monk.
Well, it seems like you've been tuned in to the right-hand side of the brain where you are connected to the cosmos, to the universe, and able to get all of this non-analytical, but more as beauty flowing into your brain. Is that correct?
Well, from a childhood, I was really interested in the arts. As I said, I didn't think of it as a spiritual thing at all. So of course, I've learned since then that many, many of the great musicians and artists and so forth were spiritually inspired.
Exactly.
But that I wasn't conscious of that at all as a kid.
Right.
But certainly, I had a great love for beauty and art and music, and I was into painting and all of that, and writing. So I was really into all three arts. I was into music, writing, and painting from an early age. But I was also into the sciences and mathematics and playing chess and all of that. So I really had a lot of left brain stuff as well.
Wow.
Kind of both.
So now that you are an accomplished musician, a rock star.
Not really.
You really manifested that because that's always what you wanted. But let me ask, what is it that you are teaching as a yogi? Do you have a special message?
Absolutely. I think that yoga is a huge thing. Yoga is like a whole universe. It's a philosophy. Mm-hmm. It's a way of life. It's a whole health system. It's a spiritual practice. It's a system of ethics. And my spiritual master even went on to apply the philosophy of yoga to the realm of socioeconomics and created a kind of a blueprint for a society based on the ethics of yoga.
Really?
Yeah, that was one of the things that particularly inspired me, was his vision of a world as it could be if we evolve further through spiritual practice and apply those principles in the society.
Wow, I would love to hear more about that. What would it be like? What do we have to accomplish to evolve to get to that place?
Well, I don't think it's something that sort of magically happens overnight. But we are, you could say, the product of an evolutionary process within the cosmos, which as a yogi I would say is within the cosmic mind or within this field of infinite consciousness. So we are an evolving species, but the next stage in our evolution is one that we have to take a conscious part in because we're self-aware. So that means, as human beings with self-awareness, if we want to go to the next stage of what we're supposed to become, we need to do practices like meditation or contemplative prayer or something that's going to develop our inner world and our contact with the creator of the universe. This is the way forward, as far as I see.
And I agree with you. And from your vision and what you were taught, what would be the place that we want to reach? How do we know when we reach it?
You mean as individuals or as a society?
As a society.
Well, I think the first thing I would look for is economic justice. I think the disparity of wealth in the world is indescribable crime. And so poverty, solving world, we could solve world poverty tomorrow if we wanted to.
And how would we do that?
A more fair distribution of wealth.
Or could we, in fact, as individuals, create? Because I'm of the mindset that poverty is really based on our perception or our consciousness level. Can we not create and be free of poverty for everyone? Do we not have that power? I'm just wondering.
I think the spiritual world, the inner world, if you like, is an infinite resource.
Mm-hmm.
But the material world is pretty much, you know, is limited. I mean, on the planet Earth, there are limited resources. There are other planets, sure, and in the future, maybe we'll start getting access to those kind of resources. But I'm kind of pragmatic about this. I've been into 40 different countries, and some of them have been countries where there is, you know, really poverty that I know there's poverty in America, but not on the level that exists in some of the places I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that, I think, if we, you know, just learn a little bit. I think that we need to address it on a practical level and say, look, we've got people with far more resources and wealth than they need, because there's huge waste. Why don't we take some of those resources and address this crying need that people, you know, in some parts of Africa or Asia or wherever, they desperately need it. Why is it so hard? And there's enough, you know, as Gandhi said, there's enough for everybody's need,
mm-hmm.
but not enough for everybody's greed. And I think that the inner problem is greed, that we have to, you know, if we want to address the internal causes, we need to look at what is it in us, because we all have it, you know, even, you know, many great spiritual people I know still have the seeds of selfishness and greed, but we need to learn to control those.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so part of the law of attraction philosophy, where every person has the power to create. Is this not the case? I mean, the purpose of my show is to show everyone that they have the power and the choice to create a life that they want. And I am the perfect demonstration of that, having created my radio show and the radio network and my practice and everything. I mean, to me, this is part of the right-hand side of the brain, being able to empower yourself to create. Are we on the same
mm-hmm.
path or not? Is this not true?
I think that there's a lot of truth in that.
Okay.
And as you pointed out, you know, when I was a teenager, I wanted to be a rock star. And even though I became a monk, I ended up not really, I'm not a rock star, but I've played to concerts to audiences of 10,000 people, and I've traveled all over the world performing, and I've, you know, worked with incredible musicians, some of them quite famous, and all of that stuff.
Isn't that wonderful?
Which was great. But you know when I look back on that, I realize that it was something that I thought I wanted, but I would not have wanted that to be the main focus of my life. I wouldn't have been happy.
Okay.
So while I do agree that we tend to attract the things to us that we desire, and that's uh-huh. part of the whole law of karma thing.
Right.
I'm also of the view that what we really need to be careful about is examining what it is that we want. Now, I do an exercise with my students. I've done this many, many times with thousands of students. And I simply ask them, think very, very carefully, what do you really want? Okay? Maybe I'll do a kind of a demonstration with somebody, and I'll run through the exercise in front of the group and then get them to do it in pairs or individually. So I'll say, okay, they'll say, oh, well, you know, I want to pass my exam. They're university students, so they really want to pass their exams. Next question is, why? And then, of course, I'll say, why? Because then, you know, I'll make my parents happy. I'll feel that I've achieved something. And then again, I'll say, why? And if you take anything that you desire, and it might be something mundane, like a nicer car or something like that, or it might be something that you want to achieve, or it might be something altruistic for somebody else. If you keep asking why, eventually you get back to the simple answer that I want to do that, I want that, or I want to achieve that because it will make me feel a particular way. It'll make me feel love, peace, or happiness. And I've done this, as I said, with hundreds, thousands of people, actually. And in the end, everybody always comes back to the same thing. Everybody wants love, peace, or happiness, or however they conceive of that. And that's the primary motivator. So if we think that we want something, say, okay, if I think that money is going to make me happy, of course, it's not always true, right?
Right.
We all know people that fall into that trap. And I've lived in very poor places. Right now, I'm living in a place which is one of the richest towns in the U.S. in Los Altos Hills, and I get people coming to me who are very wealthy, but they come to me because they're unhappy usually. And of course, you know, I think when we're thinking about the law of attraction and this truth that what we focus on tends to become real, we should remember the story of King Midas. You remember Midas, the Minoan king who asked the goddess Athena to, I think Athena or some goddess, she gave him a wish, and he wished that everything he touched would turn to gold. And of course, that was what he thought he wanted, but it actually ruined his life because his daughter came to him, and before he could stop her, she embraced him and she turned to a golden statue. And he realized he had killed the person he loved most in his life, and he threw himself off a precipice. Of course, it's probably mythological, but I'm sure it's mythological.
Yeah, but I'm sure it's happened many times that people have gone to the extreme. They don't know when to stop, because what you just said is asking why, and keep on asking why to get down to the real reason that you are wanting it is so important. And that's a very, very good instruction. But at the same time, it's the bottom line, like you said, is love or safety or security or feeling the peace. So when we can create from that, then we are in fact then creating and shifting the entire world.
Well, we're certainly shifting our world, and if it helps us to become more complete, more loving people, that will of course affect other people as well.
Right.
And that spread, the ripples spread out. I'm of the opinion that we're put in this world. We kind of live in two worlds. We have an internal world, mm-hmm. which is why I meditate. That brings harmony and, you know, a feeling of evolution internally. But we're also social beings, and we live in the material world.
Right.
And we have responsibilities there. And I feel that our responsibility in the material world, the kind of reason we're put here, is to make others happy. Mm. Is to, you know, essentially I think we're here to connect to love ourselves and to express it through our actions in the world. So I'm a great believer in karma yoga, which is the yoga of action or service.
Mm.
And that, you know, I have friends, colleagues, who, a friend of mine's from Norway, which is a very privileged country. I mean, they've got like the highest GDP in the world, I think. And he's chosen to live as a monk, and he lives in Ghana and works with villagers. And it's a very simple, very hard life physically. And he's lived in different countries. He lived in the U.S., worked here for a long time. But he said he's never been happier than working in this very, very poor villages where he's bringing water supplies to thousands of people who didn't have access to water. And he's found it personally transformative.
Wow. And I can understand, because there's nothing more beautiful than knowing that you are serving others. I mean,
exactly.
I think this is a part of life. And you can do it. I know that life is not easy in any country right now. There's so much fear going around, and it's not just fear of the individual, but it's fear collectively. And so I really do think when one person makes themselves happy, not necessarily a millionaire, but makes themselves happy and peaceful and joyous, then you're shifting all of the consciousness, and in fact, you are serving the world. So being happy and kind of that form of selfishness is actually, again, in my opinion, and I'm not a teacher, I'm just an observer, is shifting the planet into what I would, my strongest desire is that we all live in peace and that we are all empowered to create the life that we want to live.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's my dream, too. The reason why I use the example of my friend, my fellow monk in Ghana, is because we often, especially living in America, which is generally a pretty privileged place, we mistake.
It used to be. I don't know if everybody would say that now.
Well,
but
it's not as privileged as it used to be. You're right. But you know, when compared to somewhere like Ghana, it is. But the reason I like to tell that story and others like it, because I know many examples, is because often we find happiness in places other than the place we've been kind of brought up to think it's going to be found.
True.
Sometimes it's somewhere quite unexpected. And as you say, it's hard to find greater fulfillment than knowing that you're making a difference in other people's lives.
Right.
And maybe that's the road to happiness, rather than just trying to get what I think is going to make me happy, which might be stuff for me. But actually, you know, what they say, love is a gift to give away.
Let's take a short break. We'll be right back after these words.
You're listening to Law of Attraction Radio Network, enhancing the well-being of millions of listeners worldwide. LOARadionetwork.com is heard through 25 different internet radio stations, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher.com, and our mobile apps. The Law of Attraction Radio Network, your trusted source of daily inspiration at LOARadionetwork.com. Need help realizing your dreams? As a hypnotherapist specializing in the Law of Attraction, Jules Johnson can help you to break through your critical mind into your manifested dream. Get started today by going to lawofattractiontools.com. Set up a personal Skype video or phone session. Law of Attraction Tools is there to help you turn your desires into reality. That's lawofattractiontools.com.
We are back on Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules, talking to the monk dude. I just want to remind everyone that I wrote an article in Law of Attraction magazine in the last issue, so check it out by getting an online copy at lawofattractionmag.com. Now, back to the monk dude, Dada. How do we live a life of service and yet serve ourselves as well? How do we be happy as we are serving others?
Well, I think it's a flow. We need to connect to the source of love within us. And I find that spiritual practice is the quickest way to do that. And by spiritual practice, I don't just mean meditation. I think, I'm a musician, and chanting and music is a big part of my spiritual practice. And you'll come across the use of music in practically every spiritual tradition as a way of tapping into that, you know, that right brain kind of intuitive love feeling.
Right, right. And isn't like music and chanting really the involvement of the new brain?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very spiritual. Very, very spiritual.
So you know, what we use a lot in yoga is we use chanting, mm-hmm. and that kind of wakes up that feeling, creates that flow. And then in meditation, that's more like work, usually. That kind of fixes it. Mm-hmm. So that's where you can... You train your mind and you develop your will and you develop your concentration. And that gives you the power to do the things that you know that you intuitively know you're capable of.
Mm.
And that also gives you the power to do things for other people that maybe you didn't realize you could do.
Mm.
And so I think it's as I say, it's a matter of tapping into the source of love within you and creating a flow so that you're expressing it outward and it keeps flowing.
Right.
So that gives your life purpose.
Right. Beautiful, beautiful. Now, talk to me about this karma. Is this, are you bringing this from other lives into it? Or is it just accumulated in this one life?
Well, that's a good question. My understanding of this principle of karma is it's like a law of action and reaction.
Mm.
So nothing comes from nothing. In other words, you or I were born with into a physical body with a particular DNA structure, and we were born in certain, to a certain family where we grew up growing some language. It wasn't an accident.
Right.
I don't think it's a random occurrence. I think it is a result of a kind of momentum that we have created in previous lives. And that the mind and body, that what we call death, physical death, is simply the separation of mind and body. And then the disembodied mind waits and is kind of guided by the cosmic mind into the next body that matches its unexpressed, what we call sanskaras in Sanskrit, which are like, you think of them as bits of karmic reaction or unexpressed reaction to our past karma.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's, I think it's definitely a, more, life is more than a one-shot deal.
Can we resolve the karma from previous lives in this one life?
Well, I think that's what we're here for.
And how do we determine? Are you saying that anything that we're having problems on right now would be from a past life? I mean, how do we recognize it?
Well, ultimately, everything in your life right now has been contributed by the events in the past, whether in this life or previous lives. And some of those events are internal in terms of the decisions you make and the consequences of those. And some of them are external. But what you are now is the result of all of that, right?
Right.
And what will be in the future, you have a lot more influence over that than most people imagine. And it's the result of the decisions you make. And it's the result of what you focus on. So if you focus on the idea of infinite love, which is kind of what meditation boils down to for me, and that, you know, we are an expression of infinite love when we are constantly bathed in that, if we can just wake up to it and create a feeling of connection to our cosmic creator. If you focus on that for an hour or two every day in meditation, that will become more and more the reality in your life, because that's a choice you're making.
You know, I agree with you 100%, and I strongly urge people to meditate every single morning. I've discovered as a hypnotherapist, and when people come to me with depression or sadness or high anxiety, it's because they are disconnected from that cosmic love, from the infinite source of energy. You know, they're disconnected, and that's why they feel so alone.
Yep, I really agree. And there are different ways of reestablishing that connection. I certainly find that chanting is very effective for a lot of people, spiritual chanting. Meditation can be, and service can be. I mean, I had a meditation student who was doing lots of meditation and yoga. He was a very good student, but he kept complaining to me how unhappy he was. And he didn't have any obvious reason to be unhappy. I mean, he was a professional guy. He had a good job. He had friends. He was healthy. He was very good looking. He had women running after him. And I said to him, you know, he used to keep complaining to me. And after a while, I said to him, look, your problem is that you're just thinking of yourself all the time.
Isn't that the truth? Because you have to be of service in order to get outside of yourself.
Yep. And you know what he did? I mean, I'm usually not that rude. I'm a pretty polite guy, you know. But he wore my patience out. And I also said it, I really meant it. I mean, it was true. And he took it very much to heart. And the next time I saw him, he said, Dada, I've decided to go to India and work as a volunteer for 6 months in a medical project. He was a doctor. And And he did it. And when he came back, he was transformed. You could see he was a much happier man. He said, Daddy, you know, I was working, doing service, and I went there thinking I was going there to help other people. The main person I helped was me.
Ah, isn't that the truth? Isn't that wonderful? Yes. Yes. Because we are all one. And when you help another, you're actually helping yourself.
Exactly. And you feel, when you're doing that, you feel the oneness.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's why my friend in Ghana is so happy. He's there and he said, you know, the people here, they're poor and everything, but they're so loving. And they just make you feel like a part of their family. Mm. And he said it's delightful, and he gets so much fulfillment out of it. So, you know, sometimes the thing that, you know, as I said, the thing that makes us, too often we're looking in the wrong places for happiness.
Right. I agree with you. And if he was still depressed after doing the meditation or chanting, that was a good indication that he still wasn't connected, that he had to connect another
yep.
way. And so not to give up
yep.
in your quest for connection to the universe.
Right. And I think there's a few lessons I draw from that experience with him. And one of them is not to be careful about being kind of dogmatic and saying, you know, you just have to meditate more, you know.
Right.
I think everybody should do meditation, but I think we often need more than that. We need to also engage, because we're human beings. We're not designed to be an ascetic monk sitting in a cave by ourselves for our whole lives. Otherwise, why would we have been learned to speak and communicate and feel that family is important and all of these things, you know? We are emotional beings with the need for emotional connection.
I agree. Now, you just released a new meditation home study course. How does this help people to get into meditation at home?
So this is a bit where I get to talk about my cool stuff. Okay.
Yeah, I want to hear about your cool stuff. Pretty cool guy.
Yeah, so, you know, we live, you know, I meet people all the time who say, oh, I know meditation's good, but I don't have time for it.
Oh,
or
yeah.
I believe in meditation. Well, great. believing in it isn't enough. It's like believing in swimming.
Yes.
You know? So I've put a lot of thought in the last few years into how to create tools and just physical stuff, practical things like teaching tools that people can use at home. And so I did put together this course. It's an 8-week meditation home study course based on my book, which is I wrote about 7 years ago. It's called Close Your Eyes and Open Your Mind. And so the course includes the book, and it's a workbook. So you've got like a class that you can do it at home on your own. So you don't have to go and see anybody else. It's designed to do at home. It's a 90-minute class each week, and you do these exercises, and you've got to ask questions. And there's a guided meditation CD. There's a set of them. So each week you have a new guided meditation. It's a progressive series.
Wow.
And you've got an audio book, so you can listen to it in the car when you're going to work. And then there's another, some music CDs that you can, again, listen to really put you in the zone for meditation. So I've done everything I could think of after 30 years of teaching to make it easy for someone to actually develop a practice at home.
Wow, that sounds so wonderful. But here in the U.S. or everywhere now, I guess, the commute is so long. To be able to listen to something while you're driving to work, what a perfect time.
I have some that are designed to put you in a relaxed state when you're driving, and some that are actually for closed eyes meditation. They should be meditating whilst driving.
Right. Yeah, you want to stay focused on the road, but you also want to get into a real relaxed state. What a better way to start off your day, going to the office.
Yeah, it's designed for busy people.
See, that's great. That's really good. I can tell you everybody listening probably needs that.
Well, of course, I'd be the first to agree. And, you know, I'm a big fan of comedy. You know the English comedian John Cleese?
Yes.
So, of course, he was in Monty Python and wrote Fawlty Towers scripts. He says that he's doing an interview, and he says, the world will remain a crazy place until everybody meditates 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the evening. And once everybody's doing that, it'll become sane. Which I thought was great coming from such a crazy guy.
Yeah, but you know what? That's what makes him funny. I mean, he can relax enough to see the humor in life. So you are writing a comic, a science fiction book. Tell us about that.
Okay, but a comic in terms of humorous, not a comic strip. It's a humorous book, a novel. It's a science fiction fantasy comedy story. And this is one of the crazy things that I do. Yeah, it's a bit of a, if you've tried mixing The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Alice Through the Looking Glass, Lord of the Rings, and the Bhagavad Gita, you might get an idea of what I'm creating here.
Oh my goodness, that sounds like fun.
It's a lot of fun for me, at least. I hope other people like it.
So you're writing it, and as you're writing it, you're laughing?
I'm embarrassed because I'm laughing at my own joke. I'll be there writing it. I'm cracking up, and I'm glad no one else is around because, you know, you're not supposed to laugh at your own jokes.
And when are you going to be finished with this? When is it going to be open for the public consumption?
Yeah, that's the question I used to be afraid of, but finally I can say, I can safely say I'm just finishing the second draft. I've got to give the third draft to my editor on the 1st of September. So sometime early next year, I hope. Well, definitely next year.
Oh, great, great.
It's called The Microvita Tree.
Oh, wonderful. Well, you're going to have to come back on and tell us more about it when it's out for everybody to get a copy.
Oh, I'll be keen to do that.
All righty, great. And for all the listeners who would love to get that meditation information and CDs and find out even more about Dada, go to theeternalwave.com. Well, we are all out of time, but I want to thank you so much. You have shared a lot, and I especially love the part of asking why. Why is it that you want something? Why? And then you're getting down to the real reason, and that will explain everything to you. I think that's so important, and I'm so appreciative that you brought that to us today.
It's a pleasure, and it's a great, it's a really useful exercise to help give people clarity on their life direction.
Yes, and that's what we all need. So thank you very much, Dada. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much, Jules. It's been a pleasure.
And to all my wonderful listeners out there, have a great week. Go check out the Wealth Creation Cruise MP3s, now available on sale at lawofattractioncruise.com. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to Jules@LOARadionetwork.com and have a great week.